This episode is brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Harness powerful crop solutions using technology derived from nature. Products from the Acceleron BioAg brand are bioenhancers, primarily containing live microbial organisms. The products help promote increased nutrient and water availability for better yield potential. Acceleron BioAg product offerings are available for canola, wheat, corn, soybean, pulses, and more. Visit AcceleronBioAg.ca for product information and to view BioAdvantage trial results from growers like you. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Laura Rantz. For our first show of 2019, we've assembled our team of hosts and commentators from within Glacier Farm Media to talk about the year that's just passed and to look ahead at the coming year. Joining me now is Ed White and Robert Arneson of The Western Producer, Gord Gilmore of the Manitoba Cooperator, and Bruce Burnett, Director of Weather and Markets Information for Glacier Farm Media. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thanks for joining us today. So I'm going to start just with you, Robert. Give me an idea of some of the biggest stories that you had on your plate this year, this past year.
Well, I think in 2018, I probably wrote about 25, 30 stories on trade. Early in the year, the TPP, which is now the CPTPP.
It's been a year of new acronyms, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm still having a hard time with that one. But, you know, that was something that kind of dominated for the first few months of the year. And I guess, you know, it was quite surprising that, you know, that came together so quickly, given that really some people thought once the U.S. had pulled out that that deal was dead. And yet the other countries kind of came together quite quickly and, you know, really salvaged a deal. So that was sort of an impressive nugget or story earlier in the year, I think. So
Now, Ed, I know you came always well prepared with the top 10 list. Give me your top three.
Well, you know, number two is what Robert just said. Although I kind of looked at it in more of a root way because we started the year with the NAFTA talks in trade, and I'm not going to use that other acronym for it on principle. and that started off with, you know, U.S. belligerence and intimidation, threats to Canada's economy. And then it moved into relief when the deal was made. Then it went on to optimism as we thought we could go to China and steal some markets from the Americans and other places. And now a bit of a grim, hunkering town as that one has gone 180 degrees the other way. My top story, I thought, in terms of what probably affects farmers the most was the terrible second half of harvest for thousands of growers who had just a nightmare for weeks and a lot of stress. And they're still dealing in a lot of areas with storing that stuff.
We went from a dry summer to snow in some areas, right?
It's been a very challenging few years in certain places in the Western Prairies, particularly. And then, well, the third one, just like Robert, I was saying CPTPP. I'm willing to say that one. Neonics, I thought. There's an original one. Robert and I both worked on that. The threat to taking away what's a pretty essential thing for controlling flea beetles in canola and in a lot of other crops. That regulatory challenge, I think, was one that sort of surprised me the way it developed and where it's at now. And that continues into 2019.
Gord?
I think I have kind of two. One is on the practical end. I agree the weather. The weather was just incredible this year. I mean, it was like the tap got turned off and then turned back on just when they didn't want it to get turned back on, which made for a terrible harvest. And then, of course, some of the challenges of harvesting and storing that grain. And we had a series of stories on grain dryers and the difficulty of getting them set up and approved here in Manitoba. And then on the policy side, I think kind of maybe flying under the radar, I think, is the changes to the Transport Act. I think those are going to be transformational. I might be a little biased. We have a reporter, Alan Dawson, who does great work on that. So I've read a lot of stories on it over the last year. And I think it's going to be one of those things that it's going to take some time to play out, but I think it's going to kind of transform grain handling and grain shipping in Western Canada.
Now, Bruce, we probably weren't fair to you because you're the weather guy and we've stolen your thunder. But what was topping your list this year?
Well, I think, again, weather is important both here in Canada as well as abroad. And this year, the big stories internationally were the drought in Europe and Russia that really did reduce the amount of wheat that they produced there and helped buy markets a little bit as we moved along. As well, the most consequential drought around the globe this year was the Argentinian drought, which decimated their corn and soybean crops and actually gave us some decent oilseed prices for the first half of the year before we started to get into some of these trade-related downward moves. So really, the weather, not only in Canada, but in other places, has affected the markets this year to a significant extent and will likely continue on into the early part of next year, at least anyway.
Nobody's mentioned the word Trump. But I guess what the question I had is, you know, he's been so influential, but is he the issue, or is it part of a much bigger thing that's going on in the world of trade and international relations?
Well, I'll jump in. This is Robert here. I'll jump in on that one. What I really found interesting was that I received so many emails from commodity groups in the U.S. and groups called Farmers for Free Trade, and all this concern about, you know, we're going to devastate the U.S. farm economy by disrupting these trade deals, and all these predictions about, well, the Republicans are going to lose all this support in farm country, and nothing happened. I mean,
they still support the guy.
Yeah, and I found that quite fascinating. I mean, I was looking something up yesterday, and I think there's something like 35, 40 congressional districts where they have about 500,000 acres of soybeans or more. And I think about 90% of those districts all went for the Republicans and Trump, which is kind of shocking given that his policies were like devastating to soybean farmers. It's quite amazing, really, you know?
So. Yeah, at a couple of weeks ago at Farm Forum event, the analyst Sarah Wyant was talking about how recent surveys had shown the vast majority of farmers think Trump's doing a good job and they believe in him. And most are planning to vote for him again. So there's a real clash between the principles of trade that they want to see enacted and his behavior. Maybe they just think that he's bluffing. It's a big game. He got, you know, he's made a deal with Canada and Mexico. So maybe it's all bluff with us and it worked. And maybe he'll do the same with China. Maybe that's what they're thinking.
They seem to want to believe that it's part of the negotiating tactics, right? It's that he's really a good guy underneath it all and that he's accomplishing good things in the long run. What do you think, Gord?
Well, I think it's one of those things that's a little bit hard to pin down. I think that one of the things you have to look at are some of the numbers that have come out of the U.S. economy. Like, I mean, they had, what was it, 3% annualized growth rate at one point. That papers over a lot of sins, right? The you know, record low unemployment, things like that. You know, it's wasn't it Bill Clinton who said it's the economy, stupid? And I think that's, you know, sort of in action here as well. I think on the larger picture, though, maybe it's part of a more sort of secular trend because they're kind of flip sides to the same coin. But Brexit and Trump are kind of, in my opinion, are a kind of a backlash against these trade deals and against some of the people who kind of feel like they've been left behind by them. So I don't know how that plays out in the future, but I mean, we do sort of have a pattern historically you know, sort of a way of thinking emerging, and it'll last for decades, and then it starts to break down. And I think we saw that post-war, it was sort of the New Deal and classical liberalism that was replaced by neoconservatism, neoliberalism in 79 and 80. So where are we now? You know, I mean, we're at that same sort of point, maybe. I don't know.
Bruce?
Well, certainly the trade issues are front and center here. I think what concerns me the most is this does appear to be a change in U.S. policy in terms of the bilateral trade deals. So again, the all-encompassing trade deals without the U.S., despite the fact that we did CPTPP, really are probably a thing of the past here, as long as U.S. policy remains in that direction. The other thing is the WTO and the U.S. Really putting pressure on that organization by not appointing adjudicators, judges to do trade cases. So really things are starting to gum up there as well. So if we're not going to have these huge trade agreements like the WTO, what does the world look like? And to me, it seems to be a bit of a hodgepodge here in terms of who gets a deal, who doesn't get a deal, what kind of pressure the U.S. brings to bear. U.S. can generally bring to bear a lot of pressure on any trading partner because they are still the world's largest economy. But as they found out with China, there are some repercussions, and specifically in the ag industry here, that I don't think they're going to recover from at all in the next 5 to 10 years.
So what does that look like, Bruce, for Canada and Canadian farmers?
Well, the problem with Canada on the trade side is again, that we're going to have to continue exploring these larger scale deals, but we'll probably also have to move into similar bilateral agreements with people who aren't participating in those larger overall deals. And again, as I say, it probably is going to be pretty slim pickings on the large trade deal scope in the next 5 to 10 years. So we're going to have to come to free trade agreements with individual countries, that type of thing, sort of following the U.S. around, much like they are doing right now in response to the CPTPP. They're now going to Asian nations and trying to negotiate essentially the same type of access that they would have gotten through CPTPP.
When I look at the two big players right now in some of these negotiations, the U.S., which is kind of like the Wild West approach, you know, new sheriff riding into town with big guns on his belt, and then China, which is the ultimate of supremely managed economies, going head-to-head. What kind of surprises did we see coming out of that kind of relationship in the past year?
Well, I think, to be honest, the U.S. was surprised by the impact that China could have on some of their agricultural trade. It should have been fairly obvious to them, but I think they assumed that, you know, this would be a very quick and easy win, as Trump used to put it. It's trade wars are easy to win, and really that's not what happened. We got into this protracted negotiation, and in fact, I'm highly skeptical that next year in March we're going to have an agreement between the two countries. We may have some detente like they are under right now, but it's a very complex issue, and really I don't think the U.S. has gathered very many friends here in the last year or so of negotiations to have other countries come in and bolster their case.
Actually, it's Gord here.
Yeah.
That's actually something I wonder about too. It seems to me like they've almost pushed their customers together with their competitors, you know, and they're displacing themselves in the market. And I wonder how they recover from that. That's going to take some time if it ever does recover.
Ed White?
Yeah, one thing I sort of sense is that the gloves have come off in a way with world trade. I mean, look at how the Saudis were willing to treat Canada, which is quite a trading partner in many ways. I mean, that was pretty over the top. The way China's acting today is, again, pretty aggressive compared to what we've seen in the past. The way Trump acted, maybe that's the enabling character here, is that behavior seems to have allowed everybody to get extremely aggressive with things that lines we didn't used to cross now seem to be getting crossed all the time. And that is a very disruptive factor in an otherwise rather polite and civilized international environment we've had with trade for decades.
Robert?
Yeah, I guess just the one recent development with the, I guess, the arrest of the Huawei official in Vancouver.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's a lot of pressure on Canada right now because of this and negative sentiment in China towards Canada. It'd be interesting to watch in the coming months to see how this plays out, to see if, for example, I'm not sure who the we is, but if Canada decides not to use the Huawei technology for this new 5G network, and if that decision is made, what will China do in response? Will they say, okay, we're not going to be buying some of your agricultural commodities? I mean, they're going to respond in some fashion. So this will be really interesting to see how this plays out over the next, say, I guess, probably January, February, and into March to see what's going to happen there.
I mean, so. One of the things that kind of, you know, the spillover effect, I mean, the incidents of diplomacy where, you know, we now have Canadians that are being essentially held hostage because of a decision that was made on the Canadian side to arrest this executive. How could that affect our ability to export into that economy, particularly from an agricultural sector? I mean, the two aren't related, and yet everything seems to be spilling over into areas of other trade.
Yeah, there almost seems to be a phenomenon of beating up on Canada specifically as the weakest of the G7 countries, right? If you want to send a signal to the world to back off on our domestic issues, whether it's Saudi Arabia or China, it's a lot easier to take a shot at us. So that's probably where I would think the risk would be, is that we're an easy target to scrap with. Whereas if you look at the Chinese or the Americans, they're saying much nicer things, even though right now with the Huawei executive, it's an American arrest warrant that we merely executed as just a matter of course.
We're taking the hit for it.
Yeah, because we're easy to yell at.
But we were also kind of co-opted in the sense of under the USMCA, where the so-called China clause, which may or may not affect our ability to trade with China, but certainly puts a bit of a chill on our ability to negotiate, formally negotiate a trading agreement. Does that make us kind of an adjunct to the U.S. when it comes to international trade policy? Bruce?
Well, I guess from a practical point of view, we've always been a bit of an adjunct to the U.S. trade policy. This may formalize it more in an agreement. And really, in terms of the provisions in the agreement, it doesn't stop us from doing this. It's a notification clause more than anything else. And that would, you know, could trigger the U.S. withdrawing from USMCA. But, like, I mean, really, you know, would you do that is the question that you would have to ask. But, you know, again, Canada's far more trade dependent than a lot of countries out there. We don't have a large internal economy because our population is small. So therefore, we can be, you know, picked upon by other countries here in a challenging trade environment. And that's, again, where these agreements come through in terms of protecting us to some extent. And there's only some level that you can protect yourself as a nation because, countries that are emboldened to do things that aren't not in the norm can cause us some trade issues. We'll have to, again, get used to it. And it does increase the risks to especially the ag economy going forward here, because you can spend a lot of time developing a market and then see it disappear just in one political decision.
I think one thing we've got to watch, and this is Ed here, one thing we've got to watch really closely in the next few years is, does the U.S. now actually back off the sort of trade rhetoric and hostility with Canada and the sort of political games playing, which is maybe how a lot of us see it on this side of the border? Because, I mean, something like COOL could come back, right? Country of origin labeling can be always thrown up. You know, that could happen. We don't know that that's gone. The steel and aluminum tariffs are still there. So what does that mean for other politically convenient actions that could be taken? Is that gone now that we've got this renewed trade pact, or is that going to continue? And I don't think we know.
I was reading something. It's Gord here. I was reading something in the Globe and Mail the other day. It was Canadian officials talking about that spat with Saudi Arabia that they gotten into. And one of the things that some of the senior officials were talking about kind of behind the scenes is that they felt like Canada had never been more alone. And I think that that's something that we're going to kind of have to get used to. I mean, one of our traditional strongest allies has become, as Ed says, kind of belligerent towards us. And we don't know if that's going to disappear. One would hope so, but there's no guarantee that that will happen. And until it does, we are kind of standing on our own as we never really have before.
Last question before we move on to 2019. But Robert, what's your sense of how the Canadian farm economy is shaking out for this year and how well-positioned farmers are moving forward? Are they in pretty good shape overall?
Well, in the last little while, I've been talking quite a bit to farmers in Saskatchewan, Alberta, Manitoba about canola and clubroot and other diseases. And I guess some of the concerns I hear is that, you know, we're here in 2018 and producers are still highly dependent on one crop for their profitability. You know, soybeans have had two rough years in a row with very poor yields. Acres are definitely, you know, poised to drop next year. As well, we have, of course, the whole pulse issue with India still sort of hanging over the market and prices. So, you know, it's sort of precarious because if things do go south with China, then you could have a lot of pressure on canola prices, and then farmers are left with a situation, okay, well, what crop am I growing to make money? So there's just definitely some risk in the market, I believe.
Anyone else want to weigh in on that one?
Well, I think not so much on the markets, but on things like interest rates. That's what I'll be watching. You know, I think that there's a lot of risk there as interest rates start to creep up. There's been a lot of money borrowed over the last while. Farm Credit Canada says that's offset by a lot more valuable assets, but it, you know, it makes the cash flow math a lot more challenging as interest rates rise.
Bruce?
I'm probably focused a bit on input costs as we go through this year as well. The steel and aluminum tariffs are going to be work their way into manufactured goods, and that includes farm equipment. As well, there's concerns here, I think, especially about fuel prices and fertilizer prices going forward. The U.S. is likely to plant a lot larger area of corn next year, which means increased nitrogen demand. As well, certainly on the fuel side, we have the new IMO standards being implemented later this year, which should increase diesel prices as we go through the year. Now, fortunately, I guess, from that perspective, we've seen a drop off in oil, although that's not particularly good for oil workers in Alberta. It eases some of the pressure here, but as we move into the second half of 2019, probably going to see some increased diesel prices just because of the fact that global demand is going to be very high for diesel fuel.
Ed, what's on your radar?
Well, you know, I think farmers, I've been following this for a couple of years. For a couple of years, people didn't always want to accept that the commodity boom was over. You know, we had a great time from 2006 to 2013, and some people, some younger farmers too, had not really experienced a lot else.
Right.
Right, they might have seen their fathers dealing with something, but they might have eased into the business as this boom time happened, and there were all these projections of how many mouths to feed by 2050. But I think in the 5 years since that ended, farmers have learned to operate in a much leaner way. Low interest rates and foreign exchange, you know, low Canadian dollar have helped a lot compared to Americans. Those are the kind of things I'm watching. Or yeah, as Gord and Bruce both mentioned, things like interest rates, foreign exchange, and then just overall global growth, which is, you know, a pretty big factor for how much demand there actually is overall for these bulk commodities.
Robert, what do you see coming up in 2019?
I guess one issue I've been hearing more about lately is clubroot. You know, for a while there, it seemed like a lot of producers believed this was kind of a central Alberta problem, but obviously now it's quite prevalent in southern Manitoba, in the Swan River region. Of course, it's in Saskatchewan, you know, the big dog when it comes to canola production. And more people are starting to talk, okay, we need to do something about this. It's got to the point where discussing the issue and sort of like, you know, considering what to do is no longer an option. I talked to a farmer in Saskatchewan yesterday who told me, well, it's time to implement something, to actually do something about this challenge, because I mean, most growers recognize that clubroot is a major issue when it comes to, or major threat to canola productivity on their farm and in their region. And there's a sort of a feeling that, you know, we're beyond the education phase and that we need to actually do something about this problem.
It sort of brings to mind another question that I had, and something that really hasn't come up yet this morning, but it seems to me that we're being challenged on a number of fronts agronomically that are going to force some changes in how farmers operate. And I hesitate to mention the word, but glyphosate has to be at the top of that list. We're realizing that some of the markets and, you know, rightly or wrongly, consumers have some major concerns about this and how it's applied to crops that people eat. How do you think that's going to play out in the next 12 to 18 months for farmers? Are they actually going to change how they use this product? Robert, you're shaking your head.
I'm skeptical that they will change. I wrote a piece, I think, back in August saying that there's many market signals happening here, kind of telling farmers that they need to stop desiccation with glyphosate, because obviously with the whole, you know, the lawsuit in California, I mean, I think Bayer's stock value dropped about 10% overnight just because of the, you know, the repercussions or implications to the company's profitability and bottom line. And, you know, on top of that, there's so many different groups that are sort of like advocating against glyphosate, you know, all this rhetoric that it causes 87 different diseases. Right. And then, of course, then the international pressure around all that. I mean, if there's a shipment of wheat that goes over to Indonesia or someplace and they test it and find glyphosate at some small level in it, I mean, that could be devastating for Canada's reputation. So there's a lot of factors lining up here that are telling farmers to stop. But I'm not really convinced they are going to stop.
Ed?
I think farmers are going to have the choice taken away from them by the people that buy their crops. I think it's going to be, it's so tempting to overuse glyphosate, or some people might say overuse, others would just say it's appropriate and it's safe, so who cares? It's not a real issue. But in terms of consumer reception, which is feeding back through the food companies and their concern about residues, I think it's going to trickle back, as it's happened a lot in oats and other industries like that, where there's going to be real problems if you are found with residues. And so you just may not be able to make the choice yourself. You may be stuck having to do the things that you're told by the people downstream in the industry you have to do.
We're also seeing people's choices, as we mentioned before, they're seeing our choices limited when it comes to neonics and those use. Are there other agronomic issues that people need to be giving some sober second thought to? Gord, do you
I
have
think
anything?
Weed resistance. Weed resistance is a thing you hear weed scientists talking about it all the time, and they've been talking about it for 10, 15 years a lot. But if you talk to them about whether you feel like their message is getting through, they say, no, not really. I think farmers are aware of it. They know that it's a problem, but I'm not sure that they're really doing anything about it.
I'm dating myself here, but I can remember being at meetings 30 years ago that talked about weed resistance. Bruce?
I think, again, on the longer term, and this is something that agricultural producers are going to have to come to grips with over the next decade or so. Yeah, it's just the fact that the technology for detection of residues in general, and I'm talking about not only chemical residues, but also biological residues that occur as a natural part of growing a crop out in the environment, those are going to become more and more detectable at cheaper and cheaper values.
Right.
So we're going to move into an environment where especially if customers have a list of things they don't want to see in a shipment of grain or in livestock, that type of thing, then the ability of the processor to detect it will be there. And so we'll have to cope with this environment where we have a lot of detection to some very fine levels. And I think, again, this goes back to the consumer where, and you hate to say the word consumer education because they're essentially driving the bus and they'll drive it wherever they want to go. But they're going to have to come to a bit of reality here in terms of what's safe versus what's absolutely desirable on their part, because the two different production systems are completely divergent there. And so it's a signal that our farmers are going to have to deal with over the next 5 to 10 years, I think.
Well, I think we're going to have lots to talk about in the coming year. I just want to thank all of you for joining me today. I wish you the best in 2019, and thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you. You're welcome.
Thanks.
So we were joined this morning by Bruce Burnett, who's the Director of Weather and Markets Information, Ed White of the Western Producer, Robert Arneson of the Western Producer, and Gord Gilmore of the Manitoba Cooperator. Thanks very much.
Today's program was brought to you in part by the Acceleron BioAg brand. Acceleron BioAg products harness the powerful technology of nature to release soil-bound nutrients, helping promote nutrient availability at the plant root. Accelerate crop performance with powerful bioenhancers aimed at promoting nutrient and water uptake and improved yield potential. Nature, it's powerful technology. Always read and follow label directions.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.